Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. I absolutely love talking Ayurveda, and today I have the absolute pleasure of talking with France Brunel. She is a certified yoga teacher and an in-training Ayurvedic practitioner. France is also the founder and editor-in-chief of Yume, an online platform that shows us how to personalize the way we approach self-care with a unique blend of Ayurveda and the French way of life. I absolutely love talking with France today. We had so much fun. We talk all about how this time of year with the seasons changing, we can support ourselves through Ayurveda and so much more. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. Today I'm talking with France Brunel from Yume, and she is going to talk with us about Ayurveda. Welcome, France.
Thanks, Amy. It's nice to be here.
I am so excited to talk with you. I love Ayurveda, but first, I would love for you to tell our audience about yourself.
Great. So my name's France. I'm a certified yoga teacher and an in-training Ayurvedic practitioner. That means I'm training to become an Ayurvedic practitioner, and I'm the founder and the editor-in-chief of Yume. Yume is an online platform that shares simple ways to take a relaxed yet personalized approach to self-care. The way we do that is by blending both Ayurveda and the French way of life. I can tell you a little bit more about Yume, but personally, I'm born in France. Yes, I'm unfortunately or fortunately named after my own country. I grew up there and lived in Hong Kong in the US when I was younger, with quick stops in Italy and India, and I'm now based in Brooklyn.
Awesome. And so how did you become interested in Ayurveda?
I became interested in Ayurveda through just personal experience. I discovered Ayurveda 10 years ago when I went to India to do my Yoga Teacher's Training certification. And I just thought it was kind of a pleasant massage technique. I had no idea that it was actually a full-on health system that covers everything from diet to herbs to lifestyle. And recently, a year ago, I rediscovered it to treat a bunch of symptoms that weren't serious enough for kind of Western doctors to actually care about. So I was suffering from insomnia, digestive issues, eczema, high cholesterol. And so I went to an Ayurvedic practitioner and shifted the way I eat and some of my lifestyle practices and experienced tremendous benefits. And so I looked into it a little bit more and started talking about it with some of my friends who are not yogis and not really synced into that whole wellness community. And everyone was kind of expressing a desire to know more. I basically decided to become an Ayurvedic practitioner, and with the purpose of using my certification once I'm certified to democratize the principles of Ayurveda and help people who are not necessarily yogis to understand and benefit from Ayurveda.
Oh, I love it. And one of the things you talk about on your website, which is fantastic, is bringing together kind of the French culture as well as Ayurveda. And can you speak to that?
Yeah, of course. So that actually is surprising to a lot of people, but as I was studying Ayurveda, I noticed that there was lots of similarities with the French approach to wellness. So obviously, Ayurveda does not recommend a lot of French specialties in regards to the diet. So foie gras, cheese, saucisson, wine, bread, etc. is not necessarily part of an Ayurvedic diet, although it's authorized once in a while. But basically, the approach that French people take on to wellness is very similar to what Ayurveda advocates. So both approaches are gentle, they're intuitive, they're relaxed, and they're basically, yeah, it surprised me how similar they were in their approach. So For example, Ayurveda teaches a non-dogmatic, more relaxed approach to well-being, and the French have more of this laissez-faire approach to wellness. They're not obsessed about being healthy to the point that if it comes unhealthy, they are more relaxed about well-being, and they believe in working out and in eating well, but they believe that it should take the that it shouldn't be a stressful thing. It shouldn't add stress to our life. And if something healthy adds stress to our life, then it becomes unhealthy. There's a lot of things around how the French do excess in moderation and moderation in excess. So kind of the belief of practicing small yet regular healthy habits that contribute to an overall balanced lifestyle rather than making drastic and often exhausting, depleting 360 changes in the quest to wellness is something that Ayurveda also teaches, this concept of moderation and excess. So that's very different from, I live in New York City, in Brooklyn, but work in New York City, and and we tend to take things to the extremes. And Ayurveda, as well as the French approach to wellness, favor more of a gentle, all day kind of all day movement, like walking or biking to work, as opposed to being every night at SoulCycle or exercising to the point of depleting ourselves. There's lots of other parallels with French culture, but basically, as I was starting to study Ayurveda, I realized the many parallels, and it basically started to put more of a structure and an explanation behind more of the soft and lifestyle-driven joie de vivre that comes from France.
Yeah, I love that. And I had never thought about the parallels. And I saw a great article on your website about how French women approach self-care, which kind of speaks to that. And everyone I went through, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. So
it's fascinating. Yeah. Like everything from like portion control, we don't, in Ayurveda, we don't count calories. French women don't, but they do, control their portions. They eat local, they eat seasonal, and so does Ayurveda. And so there's many more parallels that, you can see on that article you refer.
Yeah. And so I guess one thing I should have covered initially, for the people listening who aren't familiar with Ayurveda, can you just give a quick description of what is Ayurveda?
Ayurveda can be called either Ayurveda or traditional Indian medicine. So it's the world's oldest health and wellness system that was developed in ancient India over 5,000 years ago. It's the sister science of yoga. They basically both come from the same Vedic scriptures, but it's also what traditional Chinese medicine, which most people are familiar with acupuncture, etc., is based off of. And so Ayurveda in Sanskrit is made up of two words, Ayu and Veda. Ayu means life and Veda means knowledge. So Ayurveda translates into the knowledge of life to describe a medicine that really teaches us how to create your own health through connection to nature and your own body. Historically, Ayurveda is medicine of the people. It's a DIY medicine that teaches you basic tools for creating balance with the purpose of avoiding the development of acute illnesses that can only be remedied, if at all, with strong kind of sledgehammer approaches. So at the core, Ayurveda really recognizes that we're not all built the same. We're all unique individuals with unique sets of needs that can only find a state of balance and well-being if we learn how to serve our body's unique and specific needs rather than following those one-size-fits-all philosophies or solutions that are so easily advocated by the wellness community. Usually it recommends three different things and simple practices that you instill in your daily life, herbal supplements, and diet recommendations. And through those three things, Ayurveda shows you how to customize your approach to self-care, covering your diet, your sleep cycles, your workouts, your skincare regimen, all the way to your supplement intake and overall lifestyle. to your own individual mind and body type, your dosha. And we can, you know, talk about what that is in a little bit. But basically what I do on Yume is show you how you can take a personalized approach to self-care based on your own constitution. So a lot of us follow those one-size-fits-all solutions that we hear about from friends or favorite bloggers, and some of them work for us and some of them don't. And if they don't, it's most likely that they're not really suited for your own constitution, your own mind and body type. And that, you know, a more adapted diet or lifestyle would work better. And so what we do on Yume is show you how you can kind of find balance and health in your life by living and catering to your specific needs.
Oh, I love that. And that is so important. And I think we need more of that in the world. So can you dive into doshas? That is such an interesting topic.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make it simple. And I usually use English to speak all things Ayurveda. And the one reason why I do that is because Ayurveda has, we can reap so many benefits from that system. And having to learn what the Sanskrit words mean create a barrier to approaching Ayurveda. So you'll hear me refer to doshas as mind and body types, or to the specific doshas like Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, which you and your audience may have heard already as air, fire, and earth. But you know, if you get confused, let me know, but hopefully it shouldn't be confusing. But basically the doshas, the mind and body type, are based off of the fact that Ayurvedic medicine is founded on the belief that you, me, and everything on earth are made from a unique mix of three elements that are found in nature: air, fire, and earth. So we all have some air, fire, and earth qualities in us, but we're born with unique blends of the three, where one or two usually dominates. So it's that combination that determines your mind and body type, so your dosha. So for example, you can be air, or you could be fire, you could be earth, or you could be a mix of air and fire and earth, or earth and air. And lastly, a balance of the three, which is actually quite rare, but often the ultimate goal. There's not one, whether air, fire, earth, that's better than the other. A lot of people are disappointed sometimes when they're specific mind and body type, but all have their advantages and disadvantages. And we all have a mix of the three in us. We just usually are born with one or two that are in stronger proportion. So that's the first thing to know about a mind and body type. We all fall into one of seven mind and body types, which are blends of those three energies. But what is a mind and body type? So we can describe it as your genetic allotment in life, kind of the deck of cards that were dealt with at conception, which may be different or not from your parent and your siblings. I'm the third of four girls, and none of my sisters and I have the same mind and body type. But that mind and body type influences your physical characteristics, your emotional characteristics, and your mental characteristics. And the reason why it's important to know your own mind and body type is that in Ayurveda, we're shown how to achieve balance by caring for our own and mind and body type, by addressing the needs of that specific mind and body type. So in order to find health, Ayurveda really believes that we should eat, sleep, work out, take care of our skin and everything else differently from each other and according to our own mind and body type. So I'll give you an example. For me, my mind and body type is air. So I have earth qualities and fire qualities as well, but I'm born with a higher proportion of air, which from a physical standpoint, air dominant people tend to have a thin, light frame body with excellent adaptability, with high energy. The energy comes in bursts, and they're usually likely to experience sudden bouts of fatigue. They typically have cracking joints, tend to get cold easily with cold hands. They sleep lightly. Their digestive can be pretty sensitive from a mind standpoint. Those guys are quick, they're alert, they're lively, they're creative. They talk and think quickly, just in case you haven't noticed. They love excitement, new experiences, travel, etc. Those guys are, when, so that's in balance. Off balance, those guys tend to experience weight loss or constipation, bloating, insomnia, aches and pains. From a mindset point, when they're off balance, they tend to be anxious, nervous, etc. And so usually in order to balance a person like that, so an air dominant person, it's very important to maintain a calm routine, to avoid extreme temperatures, to avoid foods, a lot of the foods that are unfortunately advocated in the wellness community, like raw salads, dry nuts, dried crackers, a lot of the things that actually contribute to aggravating the air qualities of an air person, because usually we balance ourselves by eating our opposite, or by living a lifestyle that's the opposite of our natural qualities. So for example, for the air person that I mentioned I was, I'm already dry, I'm already internally dehydrated, I'm already light and love movement. So I don't need lighter foods that are just going to aggravate my natural qualities. I need grounding and nourishing foods like sweet potatoes and a lot of cooking with ghee, so that internally it moistens my internal organs and gets everything lubricated. Knowing that's an example of, you know, in this case, when I discovered my mind and body type, I basically made a lot of shifts, especially in my diet and some in my lifestyle, that had a huge impact on my general well-being. And I can give you a quick overview of the two other main energies that are blended together to create the seven mind and body types. But I can stop here just in case you've got questions.
Yeah, no, that's, so I am air as well. And I think, you brought up so many good points as far as being grounding and nourishing, as far as kapha or, earth and water goes, as well as, pitta or fire. Can you speak to those and kind of the quality of those people as well?
Sure. So fire or pitta people are considered, from a mind standpoint, intelligent, ambitious achievers who have a powerful intellect, their strong ability to concentrate. Those guys are usually passionate. They're good decision makers. They're outgoing team leaders. They're entrepreneurs. They've got more of that fiery nature that really manifests both in their body and in their mind. From a physical standpoint, they tend to enjoy more of a muscular and athletic body type with a very efficient metabolism, a really hearty appetite, and a strong digestion. So those guys, because of their warm body temperature, they really can withstand the cold better than anyone else. They also, from a skin perspective, when air people tend to have a dry skin, those guys tend to have oilier skin and rosier skin. So when off balance, those guys tend to be more fiery tempered, aggressive, easily irritated, perfectionists, even workaholics who have a really hard time kind of letting go of work and, of intensely focusing. So when air people, tend to, imbalance, be stressed and anxious, those guys are like workaholics and kind of put even more focus into their life. And from a physical standpoint, they suffer from anything that's inflammation oriented. So think of it like as if there was a pretty strong fire, burning inside them. So it's very hot, and heat, aggravates inflammation. So anything from acne to diarrhea to heartburn or ulcers are things that the fire types can most frequently experience symptoms of. And so those guys usually benefit. So whether you're full, if you're dominant fire or fire plus something else, those guys usually benefit from avoiding skipping meals. Otherwise they get very ravenous when they finally eat. And anything that adds to their natural heat, like extreme natural heat or hot yoga, working out in extreme, you know, at noon under the sun, even spicy foods, alcohol, caffeine, all of those are heating. They could benefit from making more time to play versus being efficient all the time. So New York City is full of fire people, you know, staying cool, eating cooling foods and drying foods like beans, potatoes, cucumbers, lime versus lemon, because lemon is heating. So it's probably better for an air person, and so forth. So there's so many small, once you know your constitution, there's so many small shifts you can make, and that's when it gets really interesting.
Yeah, and Kapha then?
So Kapha, Earth, those guys are considered well-grounded, easygoing, relaxed, more slow-paced, affectionate, stable, reliable people. They usually strive to maintain harmony and peace around their surroundings. They're not easily upset and kind of to the can be the point of stability for others usually. They speak slowly. They've got an astounding memory, and that's very true to a lot of the Kaphas and Earth people I know. From a physical standpoint, they tend to be strong and have a sturdier build. Usually that's earthier, so heavier. And they've got soft hair, very well hydrated skin, so really like young skin, with large soft eyes, a low voice, a very good immune system. Usually they sleep very heavily and they've got pretty regular digestion. When they're off balance, they tend to sleep excessively, they become lethargic, they suffer from depression and laziness. And so those guys benefit in order to regain balance. They usually are advised to kind of get out of their comfort zone regularly, express their emotions more, try new things that take them out of their routine, wake up earlier, exercise daily, eat lighter meals, avoid napping, avoid all the heavy lethargic foods like fried foods, cheeses, breads, and so forth. So, to know your mind and body type, you should consult. There's two ways to do it. You either consult an Ayurvedic practitioner through a consultation will take your pulse, look at your tongue, and ask you a series of questions around your lifestyle and your physical attributes, even all the way down to the quality of elimination. Or you can take a quiz, which I have one on livium.com, which is an approximation. It asks you the same types of questions and approximates through an algorithm the mind and body types that you're most likely to fall into. Obviously, the right way to do it is to go see a practitioner, but those quizzes tend to be a good starting point if you want to know where you stand. And then on Livium, there's a whole list of things you can do from a diet standpoint to a lifestyle standpoint, all the way to the herbs you can take to balance each of the seven mind and body types. So you can have a pretty good head start at starting to apply some of the Ayurvedic recommendations onto your everyday life.
I love that. And I love how Ayurveda has such a comprehensive system that really considers like mind, body, spirit, the whole, you know, physical, emotional, mental aspects.
Yeah.
Health. One thing I'd also love to talk with you about is like seasonal transitions. And Ayurveda has like a seasonal clock as well as kind of a daily clock that relates to the doshas as well. But how could people kind of, or what can people do, I guess, during these seasonal transitions? So right now we're going like summer to fall or fall to winter. What are some tips for people to stay grounded as you transition?
So before I share ways to stay in balance during the summer to fall transition, I can maybe speak a little bit about why we experience a shift and why it's so important from an Ayurvedic point of view to be extra conscientious during the seasonal transition. Because sometimes, you know, if I don't know why, I tend to not follow what people tell me to do. So Ayurveda is really rooted based on an important principle, which is that the outer environment really affects our inner state of mind and body. So every day, our mind and our body work hard to maintain equilibrium. That's actually how we stay healthy and well-functioning despite the changing waves of our environment. So our mind and our body are continuously balancing themselves against the external stressors that they're exposed to. So that could be the pollution in the city we live in, the foods we eat, even our coworkers' moods, and finally, even the seasons we're in at the time. So I'll give you an example. During the summer, when the weather's hot and humid, those fire qualities of heat really build in our body as well. So we naturally feel more energetic, more extroverted, but we also feel hotter and can experience more inflammation than usual, like acne or heartburns. And we usually have a greater chance of being kind of hot tempered in that season. And so you were talking about the clock throughout the years and the seasons. What I just mentioned is basically qualities of fire, which fire is usually the summer season. But in the fall, contrary to the summer, the air cools down, it dries up. So we experience more of those air qualities inside us, whether we've got a lot of air in us from our mind and body type standpoint. So someone who's very earth, who has an earth mind and body type can still have his or her air qualities aggravated during the air season, which is fall, or Vata season, which is fall. And so usually during fall, we welcome movement and change and we're enthusiastic and imaginative, but we also experience more of a dry, dehydrated skin. We can experience arthritic pain, colds. We can suffer from constipation or kind of an inability to focus, restlessness, etc., insomnia, and so forth. So according to Ayurveda, it's really crucial during the junction of change from one season to the other to be more conscientious of our actions so that we can adjust properly to the external change and not experience the imbalances that most people feel when they're unaware that the seasonal transitions do impact their bodies and minds. So the month we're in now, September, marks the transition, as you said, from summer to fall. So from heat to coolness, from those spring vegetables to more of the late summer harvest. The seasons change, and so should we. So we should change our eating habits and our activities to be more in tune with each of the seasons, especially when it comes to the foods we eat. So tips for managing the seasonal transition are informed by what happens in our bodies during that time of year. So in the late summer or the beginning of fall, usually our digestion slows down. So one of the tips to manage the transition from fall to summer is that as the weather starts to cool, we should eat foods that are easier to digest. And those easily digestible foods are usually warm, they're cooked, and they're light. So like barley, rice, wheat are usually recommended, either tender coconut. It's a really good pacifier for air and fire conditions, but limiting your intake of raw vegetables or raw fish, which is usually cooling during the summertime, will actually tax your digestive system in the fall. So in the fall, the big tip is favor all cooked foods. Even the greens, you cook them well, you put them in nourishing soups, you cook them with oils or root vegetables, you avoid red meat, aged cheeses, fried foods. Anything that'll disturb digestion, given that your digestion is not at its peak.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the root vegetables and the oils are so grounding during this time of year. And as someone who tends to get the crackling joints and all of that, as fall kind of comes and it gets a little cooler and windier, I feel like ghee especially is so valuable. Can you just speak real quick to what ghee is? For people who may not be familiar with that.
Yeah. So ghee is clarified butter. It's one of kind of the superfoods in our Ayurveda. And it's basically clarified butter that's taken a step further. So it's clarified butter that's been gently heated on a stovetop, and when it's heated, it usually causes the milk fats, the water, and all the other impurities that's in butter to separate out to the top and the bottom of the pan, and so it leaves the golden liquid, which is now clarified butter, in the middle, and that's what ghee is made out of. So basically all the moisture evaporates from the regular butter, and it only leaves the better stuff from the butter for us to use. So it's usually removed 99% of its lactose. So even if you're, for the people who are lactose intolerant, usually they can often eat ghee without any issue. It ends up being a much lighter end product because the milk solids are removed, and it also has a higher smoke point than butter, which makes it ideal for cooking in high temperatures. So that's why Ayurveda usually recommends cooking with ghee rather than olive oil, which has a much lower smoke point. And then because it contains no water, it's practically spoil proof. So it can almost last about a year in the fridge or stored at room temperature. And it has a very good caramel nutty taste. Basically it's butter 2.0, and actually the French make croissants with clarified butter and ghee.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah. My daughter loves ghee too, and she always asks me for the yellow butter.
That's really cute.
Oh yeah.
And I think there's something too, I should check the specificity of it, but our body, so people are scared when you say, you know, like cook with butter rather than olive oil, especially females. Sometimes they're like, well, I'm going to gain more weight, etc. But actually ghee, because it's removed of all of its solids, is actually more digestible and isn't as fattening as butter.
Oh, interesting. Very cool. So I'm sorry to interrupt you on seasonal transitions, but I just wanted to touch on ghee because I love it so much.
No, me too. And I really discovered it when I started studying Ayurveda. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And you can, you know, you can buy it at any Whole Foods, any health food store, and, you know, all of them have it. So it's very easily accessible.
Yes. And it's pretty easy to make yourself really too.
I've never actually tried it. Have you?
Yeah. Yeah. I make it. But you have to have just like a decent straight, I don't know what to call it, like a strainer almost, or not a strainer, but like fine strainer sort of, to skim off the milk solids that kind of rise to the top. But once you do that, and then, it's super easy. So yeah, I love it.
Nice. And how long does it take to harden, I guess?
Oh, not long. I just stick mine in the fridge right after I make it. So you can leave it at room temperature, and it stays really soft and nice. Ours, I just put in the fridge, and it gets hard, you know, relatively quick. But to make it only, I mean, maybe a half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Most. And it's just, you can kind of put it on low on the stove and walk away and come back and melt it and ready to at least, you know, skim.
That's true. It sounds easier than I'm realizing that it sounds easier than it initially sounded. It's kind of like almond milk. I make my own almond milk, and at first I thought it was very complicated, but actually it's very easy.
Yeah. I'm going to start. I just ordered an almond cow to try to start making my own almond milk.
What is that?
Eggs.
What's an almond cow?
It's kind of like a coffee maker for almond milk that keeps the pulp like in a little central container, and then you can pour out the milk, and so you don't have to use the nut milk bag anymore.
That's really great. That's awesome.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I did not know that those things existed.
Yeah. So, but back to seasonal stuff. Yeah. Sorry for the kind of sideline there.
Yeah, I love the tips. So the other recommendation for seasonal transitions, and that applies to all season, but it's eating seasonal. And, you know, everyone says that, but before I actually started studying Ayurveda, I didn't really understand why it was so important. But basically the reason is that seasonal foods basically provide the antidote we need to balance the transition from fire months to summer months, from the fire months of summer to the air ruled fall and winter. But basically what's incredible about how nature is made is that in each season, nature really provides the ideal harvest to keep us strong, energized, and healthy. So when we eat with the seasons, we align our rhythms with the rhythms of nature. We consume produce that's at its peak freshness and packed with the nutritional value that our body needs in the specific season. So for example, in the wintertime, it's preferable to eat grounding and warming produce like squash, beets, onions, cabbage, etc., But the reason why is that because they're naturally designed to help us withstand the season's cool temperature. So they're really naturally and internally heating. So eating seasonal is a recommendation for any season, but specifically as we transition, something to have top of mind as we transition from summer to fall.
That's perfect. And we were talking a little bit before this started about farmers markets and how wonderful they are for finding those seasonal fruits and vegetables.
Yes. And I used to not go because I never had cash on hand, but now they all have those little square things. And so you can pay with credit card.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the small things that prevent you from doing things, you know?
Yeah.
The last tip I'll share for the transition from summer to fall is more of a lifestyle based tip. And so in the summertime, we tend to, because of the extended daylight hours, we tend to it's more of a fun season of, you know, we tend to have lots of barbecues, pool parties, other kind of parties or festivities that last late on into the night. But when fall comes around, it usually feels good to slow down and avoid all of the stress that comes from jumping around from one place to the other. So if you've got a yoga and meditation practice, obviously don't skip it specifically during that transition and keep at it. But also there's a few things we can do to protect our nervous system and hydrate our skin. And that's what Ayurveda calls Abhyanga, which is self-oil massage. And so, you know, a lot of people are like, what, you put oil on your body? Gross. But actually it's the same as just putting a moisturizer on your body. The only thing is that usually Ayurveda recommends doing it before the shower. So instead it's just the same amount of time, but instead of doing it after the shower, you do it before and you dry brush and then you apply oils on your body. And usually they're infused with herbs and there's different oils for different mind and body types, but doing it increases proper blood circulation and lymph drainage, which usually encourages the elimination of toxins and cellulite. So it's an aesthetic perk. But overall, it balances your nervous system and hydrates your skin. And, you know, it's amazing. We've got thousands of sensory neurons per every square centimeter of our skin. So just taking 3 minutes to apply oils from feet all the way to your head or face is something that helps ground someone during the fall season, where usually people get a little bit more anxious.
Yes, that is such a good tip. And I love Abhyanga. And even, I mean, if you really get into Abhyanga, there are even specific oils recommended for the specific mind-body types. But I think this time of year, I tend to go towards sesame oil because of the warming qualities. Do you have any recommendations around that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Sesame oil is usually recommended in the fall, when coconut oil is more cooling in the summertime. So those are kind of the larger blanket oils. Then you can be more specific based on your mind and body type. But overall, yes, that's exactly right.
Great. So how about, let's transition into nourishment, because obviously I love talking about that. What are Ayurveda's principles for getting the most nourishment out of the food that we're eating?
Yeah, the first principle I would say is that to eat invigorating versus lackluster foods. So the reason why is that in Ayurveda, we say we are what we eat. So to most people, that just means that the vitamins, the carbs, the proteins in our food are building the cells, the blood, the bones, all the tissues of our body. But in Ayurveda, you are what you eat, or you are what you digest more precisely, really means that the food we eat not only influences our physical body, but it also has a psychological and emotional effect on us, and a spiritual effect. So we should really feel agile and energized after we eat, not sluggish or moody like we so commonly feel after a meal. So the way to get the most nourishment out of the food is really to look at the quality of the food we eat. So because those qualities actually literally create our bodies, our body, our state of mind, and our emotions. So the foods we eat really give us life on all levels. So it's really important to know the qualities of the foods we put on our plate, because the same qualities will end up in us. The role of food is really to charge us with energies. And some of the foods that we eat are full of life. And some of the foods that we eat are energetically dead. So that first principle is really looking for foods that are invigorating, like whole fresh foods, as opposed to boxed, canned, that really still contain the intelligence of nature and thus create more vitality, alertness, happiness when we eat them. So fresh veggies or fruits are really alive, and they are carrying the benefits of the sunshine and the minerals from the earth that they were grown in, which in turn give us way more nourishment in our bodies. So fresh, invigorating foods are definitely the one first way to get most nourishment out of the food.
Oh, totally. And I think, too, about building OGIS, in this kind of realm of doing the things and like digesting the food and building that like vital life force, right? Because food is like the energy we consume, like energy, not just in calories, but like we kind of incorporate that energy, like you said, into our bodies. Can you speak a little bit to OGIS and like kind of that vital energy?
Yeah. And so that's interesting, because also the OGIS is something that we haven't covered in our training yet. But the role that food has at building that sap, I know they kind of use that metaphor of OGIS being the sap that feeds your physical body and your emotional, spiritual body. But I will maybe speak to that in a second interview that we do together once I'm more trained on that.
Oh, that's fine. So as far as additional, like nourishing the soul and kind of like the spirit, I think too about like the atmosphere we're eating in and like eating with people. And I think there's an overlay with the French culture there as well, right?
Yeah, that's pretty big. And that's huge. So, you know, it's not only the foods we consume that allows us to get the most nourishment out of our meal, but how we consume the foods and how the foods are prepared. But when we eat, the other tip is that we should really be in a very peaceful state of mind and atmosphere. So we should eat our foods in a settled and more calm environment where our food and our table arrangements are attractive to the eye. We make sure that the dining area is clean, pleasant. So it's ideal to eat with family or good friends, but obviously we also eat alone in silence, and that's great. But overall, we shouldn't eat when we're involved in an intense discussion or argument at a table. I'm sure you and our listeners have experienced this in the past, when we've eaten stressed out or while we were having an argument with someone, and have experienced kind of stomach aches or heartburns afterwards. And that's huge in term in Ayurveda. We say that, you know, the way you eat has a huge impact on your digestion, and digestion is at the core of health. So even kind of if you're eating on your own, resisting the impulse to switch on the TV or a podcast, which is really difficult for me. But when I do it, I really feel better and more settled, more appreciative and of the foods I eat, and therefore my digestion is usually much better afterwards. So that has a huge impact.
And I think digestion is so important. And in Ayurveda, they talk about kind of building that digestive fire.
Yeah.
Besides like eating in kind of a calm state, do you have any other tips for building that fire, or really digesting better?
Yeah. So we are what we digest, because we can eat healthy foods, but so for example, brown rice is considered healthier just because it has more nutritional value than white rice, except brown rice is very hard to digest. And most people have a bothered digestion from just modern life. And so they generally don't have the physical ability to draw the nutrients from the brown rice. So Ayurveda usually recommends eating white rice because it's easier to digest. There's a lot of things we can do for our digestion, but one is we shouldn't eat if we're not hungry. If we're not hungry, our body's not building all the digestive juices and the digestive enzymes that it needs to break down the food and prepare it for the digestive process. And so that's one. Second, digestive enzymes need hydration, proper hydration before meals. So if you want to digest better, one of the tips that Ayurveda recommends is drinking warm or room temperature water at least half hour before actually sitting down to a meal. So proper hydration will kick in the production of digestive enzymes and get you ready for digesting the meal that you're about to have. And so we tend to stop drinking half hour before or 15 minutes before, and we tend to not drink during a meal, because all of the drinking, the liquids, actually, whether it's, that doesn't take in consideration soups, but water or any other liquid actually, except for soups, usually dilute the digestive enzymes and make it harder for you to digest. You drink at least half hour or 15 minutes before a meal, and then you wait 30 minutes to an hour after a meal to have water or a tea or something else. So you give a proper chance to your digestive system by really decomposing the foods and getting the most nutrients out of those foods.
Cooking foods, even like fruits, can definitely help too during this time of year, particularly for digestion.
Yeah. There's tons of stuff around digestion. So cooking, eating raw is harder on your digestive system than eating cooked. So when you cook a food, you're starting the decomposition process, and so you're helping out your digestive system by giving it food that's easier to digest. When you think about what you feed to babies, we don't give raw food to babies, and we kind of forgot that we're sensitive humans when we become adults, but really we're just bigger babies. And so if your stomach aches, or if you don't sleep very well, or if you're tired, try eating more easily digestible foods, like cooked foods that are oatmeals and kichuris and soups, chicken soups, things that are very easy to digest, and you'll feel better and more energized afterwards. But fruits, cooking fruits for sure. And then, there's a whole thing around food combinations. You could be eating healthy foods, but they're badly combined with each other. So we say, for example, milks and fruits, or fish and cheese, or things like that are very hard to digest. But fruits, we, especially in France, we actually tend to end with a dessert. Sometimes we want to be healthy, and so we eat a peach or a melon at the end. But actually eating fruits with other types of food bogs down your digestive system, and it's better to eat fruits in between meals. So an hour away from the beginning or the end of your meal. And that's because the fruit actually stays in the stomach before it's sent to the digestive system. An hour only. So basically your stomach takes an hour to break down the fruit, when it actually takes 2 hours to break down any other types of food. So if you have the fruit with the other foods, the fruit has to wait an hour before it's sent to the digestive system. And while it waits, it usually ferments and creates gas and bloating. So, and you know, beyond the aesthetic effects, it's actually hard on your digestive system as well.
That's such a great tip. And I know I can hear people right now being like, wait, did she say not to put fruit and yogurt together or fruit and dairy together? Yeah. How about my smoothies, right? Yeah.
And can you can shift to almond or cashew or coconut milk, you know?
Right. Yeah. So using the other alternative milks. And so Ayurveda is mostly talking about like cow milk, correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, they talk about both actually, but yeah, a huge misconception about an Ayurvedic diet is that it's vegetarian or vegan even. But yeah, obviously Ayurveda is Indian, and India celebrates the cow. The cow is sacred, and anything that comes from the cow is beneficial. But from a physiological standpoint, they do recommend consuming dairy, but in its proper combinations.
Mm-hmm.
But and if oftentimes, you don't like dairy, you can shift to other non-dairy alternatives.
Yeah, and oftentimes I feel like the dairy is often warmed in order to make it more digestible, or like spices are added, like golden milk.
Exactly.
Good example of that.
Yeah.
As far as dairy and digestibility, can you speak to why like the fruit and dairy are not combined?
It relates back to what I said around how the fruit takes a shorter amount of time than any of the other nutrients to be processed by the stomach before it's sent to the digestive system. So dairy is just part of all the other foods that fruits are not okay to be combined with. So fruits are really meant to be eaten on their own. So kind of the prosciutto lemon appetizer that a lot of people eat, at least in southern France or Italy, is really hard on the digestive system. And so is dairy mixed with fruit.
And speaking of nourishment, what does nourish mean to you?
Good question. So apart from kind of eating well as a form of self-respect, to me, nourish means giving oneself a chance to flourish or succeed or live life fully. Because if you're not nourished on all the levels we talked about earlier, there's no way that you can have a chance at winning. and, you know, it's not winning against others, but winning for yourself based on your personal ambitions and aspirations.
And what's one thing that you do pretty consistently for self-care?
There's a bunch of things, but if I have to choose one, I would say that I eat for my own mind and body type. So we talked about earlier, I'm air. So I tend to eat an air pacifying diet. But there's one thing that's good to know too, is that, you know, we're constantly changing, you know, our external factors are constantly impacting us. And so I adapt my diet based on how I feel that day. Cause we're constantly in flux. And so although I'm air, I do still have some days where, my earth qualities in me are greater than on other days. And so I feel earthy. So I'm slow moving, I'm more lethargic. And so in this case, I'll eat lighter foods like greens, even quinoa, even pepper my food with black pepper. That's usually like an energizing tonic. I avoid all of those heavy grounding nourishing foods that I usually eat on a more regular basis. So although you are a mind and body type, you know, the whole point is not pigeonholing you into a type or like an astrological type. The goal is to give you more guidelines for understanding what suits you on a general basis. But then you're obviously constantly in flux, and you've got the three qualities in you. So you have to check in with how you feel and kind of adapt your diet based on that.
I love that. And that's, I think sometimes people get a little too black and white about it. Like, I'm Vata, it has to be this, but having the kind of daily check-in to how am I feeling, and knowing that you shift between the three, and some days you're more and some days you're less, makes a ton of sense. I love that.
But I mean, after Thanksgiving dinner, we all have increased earth qualities.
Right.
So, you know, eating lighter will help everyone, even the air, mind, and body types.
Yes, that makes so much sense. Well, France, it's been so fun talking with you. Thank you so much for being on the Nourish and Shine podcast. You are so full of wonderful information, and I know people are going to want to connect with you. How can our listeners find you?
So thanks for having me. It was an amazing chat. You can find me on liveyum.com. So live like the verb, liveyum.com, or on Instagram at liveyum as well. You can, take the quiz to figure out what your mind and body type is, and, you know, reach out if you've got any questions on how to make sense of everything. And I look forward to seeing you guys all on those two platforms.
Wonderful. And I'll link everything up in the show notes. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.